Disney's live-action remakes, why are they making them, and are they making any money? Well, let me explain.
Let me explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
So I was driving along Camden Street on the way to work the other morning, and I passed a 7-foot-tall animated Stitch, as in Stitch from Lilo and Stitch, you remember. The movie, and you've probably seen it, it's pretty hard to avoid the ads at the moment. And I just had to think, when is it going to end? Like, is this the best that a multi-billion dollar studio like Disney can offer at the minute? Just CGI'd versions of what were really good movies I watched as a kid. But there must surely be some method to the constant barrage of nostalgia porn, right? So let's dive in. Is it all just a cash grab? Believe it or not, Disney actually started trying to enter the world of live-action remakes 3 decades ago. It started with a little-known remake of The Jungle Book in 1994, with Disney already adopting a strategy that it would go back to again and again. Take a big prestige title, remake it on a decent budget, with famous faces to front the cast. In this case, it starred Sam Neill, a year off the back of the first Jurassic Park, Lena Headey, who would become known to us decades later as Cersei Lannister, and one rather fancy-talking John Cleese.
Now this bridge separates mankind from the animal kingdom. To cross over there is to take your life in your hands. You see this sign? It says, danger. To cross this bridge is to enter the black jungle, the jungle of death.
Actually, Doctor, All the sign says is, beware, this bridge is old.
It's a very literal translation, Kitty. Come on, ladies, we'll do our painting down there.
The film cost somewhere between $27 and $30 million to produce, and worldwide it grossed a little over $52 million. But there is a rule of thumb in the film world that a production needs to gross between 2 and 2.5 times its production cost to break even, when you take into account the costs of marketing and distribution and everything else that goes with getting it to market. So at the best, The Jungle Book of 1994 broke even or made a slight loss for the studio. Undeterred, though, they pushed ahead with the 1996 film 101 Dalmatians, where Glenn Close starred as the stylish but terrifying Cruella de Vil.
Harry Connick had invited my daughter and I to go down to Mardi Gras in New Orleans, and it was at one of the day parades, and a little girl came across the street with her mother, kind of quivering for an autograph. And her mother said, this is what's Cruella, and the little girl was... And I thought, I'm not Cruella, right? And I went, ha ha ha. And she went,
she burst into tears. So right now I have to be very careful.
Yeah.
Because it's scary for children.
That proved more of a hit and was the 6th highest grossing film worldwide that year, grossing $320 million on a $67 million budget. It was so successful it got a sequel, but 102 Dalmatians, which was released in the year 2000, underperformed, making a little over $183 million on about a $90 million budget. It was a full decade then before Disney decided to return to remaking old classics, but they did it with one that initially, at least in its release in the 50s, wasn't the biggest commercial success, but one that many people will remember from their childhood, those days watching RTÉ2 on a random Saturday over the Christmas break, Alice in Wonderland.
Why, you're a cat.
A Cheshire cat. All a mimsy. Oh, the water goes.
Oh, wait. Don't go, please.
Very well.
Oh, no. Thank you, but I just wanted to ask you which way I ought to go.
This time, fresh from the highs of the Pirates of the Caribbean series, Johnny Depp took on the slightly psychedelic Mad Hatter to headline an A-list cast.
McTwist brought us the wrong Alice.
It's the wrong Alice.
It's absolutely Alice. You're absolutely Alice. I'd know you anywhere.
Joining Depp either in person or on voice roles were Helena Bonham Carter, Anne Hathaway, Alan Rickman, Barbara Windsor, Michael Sheen, Stephen Fry, Christopher Lee and Matt Lucas, among others. And the result was a runaway box office hit. A production budget of $200 million earned more than a billion at the worldwide box office. It was the second highest grossing film in the world in 2010, just behind Toy Story 3 and ahead of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 and Inception, even though it falls way behind all three of those movies on the Rotten Tomatoes scores. And in the minds, I'd say, of a lot of people, you'd say the other three were more prestigious. They're just better movies. But it was Alice in Wonderland that pipped the number two spot. It set a bit of a template for Disney, much like the Marvel films that were emerging around the time through Iron Man, that the company was set to essentially flog to death for the next decade and a half. 4 years later, the next live-action remake genuinely took a creative twist on its source material, with Angelina Jolie's Maleficent twisting the story of Sleeping Beauty, telling the tale of a fairy who was betrayed by a human and as a result puts a curse on a princess. It grossed $750 million on a $180 million budget, more than covering the costs to be another financial hit. And then in 2015 came a remake I have absolutely no memory of having ever existed. Disney's next step was fully into the retelling of old classics with, apparently, Cinderella.
I hope to see you again, miss.
Ragged servant girl is what you are, and that is what you will always be.
And again, talk about a stacked cast for a film that I certainly didn't know existed. Cate Blanchett, Lily James, Hayley Atwell, Helena Bonham Carter again, because she was just in everything around that time. Stellan Skarsgård, Rob Brydon, you know, the stars abounded. But lots of people must have seen it, even if I had never heard of it. On a production budget of $91 million, it took in $543 worldwide. Another very clear success for Disney. So you can see where I'm going with this. These may not be absolute classic films when you think of some of the best Disney films out there, but they were raking in the money. There has been quite a few releases since, and Disney has been pulling money in from the really successful ones. In fact, in a 3-year run, the combined worldwide box office take on The Jungle Book, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin and The Lion King was more than $4.8 billion. That, on a combined production budget of $872 million, means even after marketing and distribution is taken into account, Disney likely made somewhere between $2 and $2.5 billion on those four productions alone. Now, those happen to be four of the five as well, with the strongest approval ratings from viewers. Per Rotten Tomatoes, audiences actually thought that the remakes of The Jungle Book and Aladdin were slightly better than the originals, while The Lion King was just behind the animated version, and there was maybe 10 or so percentage point difference in approval ratings for Beauty and the Beast, with the old one winning out over the new. Now, those are very different to the critic scores, though, it must be said, and they also had some of the biggest names of the series, or the live-action remake so far, involved Will Smith, Emma Watson, etc. Since the pandemic, though, things have been a bit more hit and miss for Disney's live-action division. 2020's Mulan was hit by cinema closures and mostly went straight to Disney+, as did the pretty forgettable Pinocchio and Lady and the Tramp. Mulan there hit by the COVID pandemic. One of the best films they've made to date was Emma Stone's Cruella, which drew a 97% audience approval rate on Rotten Tomatoes, but it only just about washed its face financially at the box office, again, partly because of the pandemic. But it was interesting, sort of an origin story for Cruella de Vil. So it was a live action, but it wasn't quite the original story. It was a spin-off that was quite a good film, but only did okay when it actually came to brass tacks. But it's really been in casting and controversy where the last few movies have drawn the ire of quite a few people. When Disney decided to make Halle Bailey the star of The Little Mermaid, there was a significant backlash to the idea of a black Ariel. It even led to the hashtag NotMyAriel online and no end of discourse about it. The film did pretty poorly in large parts of Asia, but was profitable and actually made more than the original Little Mermaid when you account for inflation. But it did throw Disney into the culture wars, and that ramped up even further when the studio decided to remake Snow White. Snow White, to some people, became Snow Brown, as Rachel Zegler was cast in the lead role, quite aside from the fact that she had also criticised some of the outdated elements of the original film. She even called the prince a weird stalker. The biggest controversy surrounded the Seven Dwarves and was really kicked off by the Games of Thrones actor Peter Dinklage.
Literally no offense to anything. They're very proud to cast a Latino actress as Snow White. It makes no sense to me. You're progressive in one way, but you're still making that fucking backward story of seven dwarves living in a cave. What the f*** are you doing, man?
In the end, they used CGI for the dwarves, but were then criticized for denying actors with dwarfism major on-screen roles. So amid all the allegations of being woke white, and it just not looking very good of a movie anyway, it made a disappointing $205 million at the box office compared to a budget of at least $250 million. It's been Disney's first massive flop of the genre, keeping pressure on the next film off the production line.
We have apprehended a dangerous experiment. Where is he?
He escaped.
He is trying to find the police cruisers.
He took the red one.
What hideous planet is caught in your crosshairs?
Yes, we're back to the giant promotional Stitch. Lilo and Stitch is now out in cinemas, and it's going to be a real test of whether the live-action remake genre has more legs. That is not a Stitch joke. I am aware he has, what, six legs? Was that what he had when he wasn't pretending to be a puppy? Can a CGI remake actually capture hearts and minds again in the way that so many of those original movies did? I think that's the question. Lilo and Stitch actually looks all right from the trailer, whereas you could tell straight away with Snow White, you're like, this is not going to be a good film. And look, some of those movies have been pretty decent, and maybe the idea is that they're bringing on a new generation of kids for whom The Jungle Book, Snow White, The Aristocats, all those originals that we would have watched, just look dated. They look old now by comparison to what, you know, Paw Patrol and Bluey and all these different things the kids are watching on Netflix. So there is that element of it, but let's also not pretend there's anything but the bottom line with all these productions. Like, one flop can be allowed from time to time, but not on any sort of a consistent basis for the big studio. So future projects are now very much in doubt, including a Bambi remake that just sounds kind of grim in live action, Robin Hood, Hercules, The Sword in the Stone, and a live-action Moana, which sort of just undermines my previous point. I mean, that one I find it hard to see the need for. Moana came out in 2016, there was a sequel last year, and now they're talking about a live-action remake. I mean, do we really need to see Dwayne Johnson topless singing on the ocean? I mean, maybe some of you would say, yeah, I'd watch that. They watched Baywatch for the same reason, equally terrible film. There you go. One final bit of stats geekery. I was wondering if the remakes are making as much money as the original films did when you adjust for inflation, and some of them actually are. So if you look at the Alice in Wonderland, made more than $1 billion in 2010. The adjusted figure for the 1951 version was just $21 million. So actually it did an awful lot. It was an awful lot more successful. Maleficent completely outperformed Sleeping Beauty at the box office. At least Cinderella, the 1950 version, when you account for inflation, made about $300 million more at the box office. The Jungle Book, even though it made nearly $1 billion in 2016, in 2016 money of 1967, if you know what I mean, it made $1.6 billion, so quite a bit more there. Beauty and the Beast, the modern one, made a lot more, €400 million more when you account for inflation. Aladdin, about even. The Lion King, about even. And then Mulan, kind of difficult to know because of the theatrical release. You see some of the ones that, I mean, Cruella made $230 million, even though it was a good film. Not quite comparable to 101 Dalmatians, but when you account the 1961 version to today's money, or to the money of 2021 at least, it took in $2.7 billion. You kind of forget how much of a hit that particular movie was. So it is interesting. There is money there to be made. I suppose the biggest loss, the starkest figure, is Snow White. So the 2025 version made about what did I say, about $205 million all in. It was the first, it was really the one that kicked off this whole Disney movie saga back in 1937. Snow White was the first feature-length film. Such prestige title for them. If you adjust 1937 prices to 2025, to today, it would have made effectively $1.6 billion at the box office. So that just shows you how far off the pace the modern remake was. Let me know what you think. Do you actually enjoy the movies? Are they good? Am I maybe haven't seen them all? Am I doing them a disservice by being critical and saying that a lot of it is just money spinning, or is it money spinning for a new generation? Thanks for listening to Let Me Explain. Don't forget to subscribe wherever it is you are listening, and I will be back next week with another episode. Chat to you then.